I am so in tuned with what my body needs based on my cycle, based on how I've been training, and based on, you know, the goals that I have for myself in terms of promoting health span and lifespan, that it's more of an intuitive way to eat for me now. And that's what I really want people to get from whatever protocol it is. Like for me, what's worked for me and my tribe has been very much a keto clean protocol. But if you say, well, you know, I'm going to do paleo, or I'm going to try to do keto in a vegetarian way, like whatever, it doesn't really matter what it is, as long as you are serving and nourishing your cells so that they can work in a way that is optimal and you can, you know, self-actualize on a cellular level.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So a few weeks ago, we had Dr. Anna Kabeka on, and we started to talk about the ketogenic diet and how it can be so unique and so important for women. And we had so much feedback around that and so much interest in the ketogenic diet and how do we do it the right way? And is it the right thing for women? And how can we take this to the next level, that we brought on the ultimate expert in the ketogenic diet for female brains, physiology, and entrepreneurs. And here we have Dr. Stephanie Estima. Dr. Stephanie is an expert in metabolism and body composition. She's a doctor of chiropractic with a special interest in functional neurology, brain metabolism, and specifically the application of the ketogenic diet and fasting to female physiology. Her framework, the Estima Method, is particularly focused on distilling strategies in nutritional proxies, movement, posture, and mindset to actualize human potential. She is also the podcast host of the very brand new podcast, Better, and she's a very dear friend, and I'm so excited to introduce you to Dr. Stephanie Estima. Dr. Stephanie Estima, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you for having me back. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's been about 125 episodes since we last hung out, and you've been up to some really incredible work. And I'm really excited for this conversation today because we're going to jump into a conversation around women's brains and the ketogenic diet and who should do it and who shouldn't, and really like how we equip ourselves as female entrepreneurs to be the superheroes that we are out there in the real world. But before we do that, can you give everyone a bit of a background in terms of who you are? We haven't heard from you since episode number 14, and you've been up to some pretty crazy stuff in the last year and a half.
Yeah, it's been a ride. So just for background, my professional training, doctor of chiropractic, I was in private practice for 16 years, and always had a slant towards brain health, brain optimization through different proxies. So nutrition, fitness, rehabilitation, mindset. And in this last year, so earlier, we're in, you know, 2019 at the time of this recording. So earlier this year in April, decided to close down the practice. And I know I had had some heart to hearts with you at some of the masterminds that we are both a part of in terms of, should I be doing this? How should I do this? What does this mean? And really just going all in for going for maybe more of a bigger audience in the online space. So we have online offerings, and I just started a podcast as well.
Your podcast is amazing, and we're going to jump into that. Yep. But here's a question I really want to start off with, because I know we hang out with a ton of entrepreneurs, and I feel like the biggest thing holding entrepreneurs back, in particular women, because you've got kids and I've got kids, and we're doing all the things, is energy. Mm-hmm. And we often articulate, yeah, I don't have enough time, but for me, that is just code for I don't have enough energy. And I want to unpack that with you today because you've got so much to say on that piece. But can we open with that idea? Like from your perspective, why do you think we don't have the energy that we need and desire and want to do what we need to do in this world?
So there's a couple of reasons. One, I'll dive into a little bit of the physiology around it first, and then we can sort of go from being quite granular to backing it up to look at sort of the forest from the trees. So when we think about energy on a cellular level, it really comes from two different silos. We have our exogenous sources of precursors that will make energy. So what we get from our diet. So the fats, the proteins, the carbohydrates. And then we also have endogenous, or, you know, the food that we store in our body. So the carbohydrates that we store in our liver and muscles as glycogen, the carbs and the fat that we store in our adipose tissue, and of course the proteins, the amino acids that we store throughout the body in our muscles as well. So when we are thinking about creating energy, we know that we are going to have it. We are either going to be creating energy at the cellular level from our diet or from our stored food. Now, if your diet is sapping your energy, if you're eating foods that make you tired, that put you on a bit of a hormonal roller coaster, then this is going to affect the energy that you have. And if you are not utilizing, and I hope we'll get into this today, if we don't have time, of course I can give you some resources, but in terms of tapping into the alternate fuel system that we have for creating energy. So we have, you know, a fed state when we're eating, we have certain pathways that are activated in terms of being able to create energy. And then when we're in a fasted state, we also have alternate mechanisms for being able to create glucose and other substrates for energy in order to drive our metabolic and our energetic needs. So on a micro level, if you are not eating in a way that honors your biology, and we're talking specifically with females, I want to pull in this idea that you're not eating that, you know, that honors your menstrual cycle if you are menstruating, or if you're moving into peri and postmenopause in a way that honors the changing hormonal landscape that you have. We are going to sap energy that way, because you are, you know, women are not little men, right? We are much more hormonally complex. We are not little. And this is a big issue. I was just giving a talk recently at Dovetail, and there are so many, as female entrepreneurs in particular, we are a special breed of crazy, because we are all type A personalities. And if something hurts, if something is, you know, if we feel off, we just put our head down and we plow through it. And we do so until we, you know, usually until someone will present to, you know, my practice or your practice with, you know, symptoms of, you know, insomnia, inability to maintain, you know, to initiate and maintain sleep, relying on coffee, all this sort of hypothalamic or this HPA axis dysregulation. So for the nerds that are listening, I love and honor you. And that, of course, you know that stands for hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysregulation. So it's important for females in particular, because we, you know, if you're a female entrepreneur and you are running your business, you have your day job, but stats will say or show that a woman who comes home at the end of the day from her work, she is much more likely to be the primary caregiver for her child. So she's going to be the one, you know, doing the homework, doing the nighttime routine, and then she's also going to be taking the lion's share of the housework as well. So she's the one doing the laundry and the dishes and all that kind of thing. And that's not to say that, you know, there's no judgment there, but that just typically is what happens. So unless you have the financial capacity to delegate those things out to, you know, housekeeper or whatnot, it's the female where the lion's share of these responsibilities tend to fall on. So as female entrepreneurs, of course, you always want to be, we want to be doing all things excellent all the time, right? So
I know
we want to be doing our
that.
Job. No, nothing. You have three children, you just did a reno, and you run this huge practice, and you know nothing. You have no idea what I'm talking about. So as women, female entrepreneurs, we push our biology, we push those biological limits to the brink, and we often end up with hormonal dysregulation, very difficult or even on the other end, scanty periods. And then our menstrual cycle is screwed up. So talking about nutrition as a proxy for helping to heal those things, along with other things like fitness and weight training and lifestyle and all of those are a really powerful way for us to look at our biology, honor our biology as females, and honor the hormonal landscape that we have that is very distinct and different from our male counterparts.
Yeah, I love that you use the word honor, because even when I'm working with patients and we start talking about food, they're like, well, actually, you know, my diet's okay. There's really no universal definition for an okay diet. But most of the time when we delve into that, there's a huge difference between a diet that will keep you alive on a day-to-day basis and a diet that truly honors your potential. That is a, that's a massive spectrum. And I would really love to hear a little bit more about that, because I know that you talk extensively related to the ketogenic diet for women. And I also know, and I preface that with like the ketogenic diet for women, because the literature and the books and the Instagram posts and all the things about keto, it's the male version of the ketogenic diet. Mm-hmm. And like usual, right, we're kind of forced to fit ourselves into that mold, or the literature's done on men and we assume it's different, but like we're all painfully aware of the fact that we are not the same. Can we talk a little bit about I want to talk about the ketogenic diet in particular, because we had this discussion a few months ago with Anna Kabeka. We were talking about the ketogenic diet, and I think this is going to be, I want people to understand it, and I want them to understand it uniquely for the physiology of women.
Sure. Yeah. So first, I would love to say, as we dive into this, that you can, like, the standard American or standard North American diet, you can be eating what you think is keto, but if it's all processed foods, you're eating a standard American diet. Like, you can have all the keto products from all the aisles, but that is not what we're talking about here. You can do paleo, you can do vegan, like, you know, if you are eating things that are highly processed, this is where we start to run into issues. So it's a very basic unifying principle. We want to be thinking about the ketogenic diet with respect to eating whole foods. So those are things that actually occur in nature, not keto bars, not keto cookies, not keto whatever. So I just wanted to say that, because people are like, oh no, I'm laughing because the time.
And, yeah. They're like, I'm super healthy. I eat gluten-free. I'm like, you eat a bag of gluten-free pretzels every day. So you are a gluten-free diabetic. But yeah, real food.
Like, you can do paleo on protein bars. And, you know, so there's something to be said about whole foods. And maybe we'll talk about this in a little bit, but this is probably why the carnivore diet has been shown, at least there's some anecdotal evidence anyway, to show that the carnivore diet is very good for women with autoimmunity, because you are forced to only eat actual food. Like, you can't eat anything else but nose to tail. But
it's so weird we even have to say that. You just time it for everyone. We have to say this. It has to be real food. And sometimes, and I want to get into it, I'm just going to throw this out there. Sometimes when my patients get super bogged down, they're like, but I don't know what you mean by this. And is this the right? I was like, step back and just start by eating high vibration foods. And what's so funny, everyone knows what that means. They know that it doesn't matter how whole the ingredients is, if they ripped it out of package, it's not nearly as high vibe as that organic apple sitting on the table, irrespective of what that does to blood sugar and what diet it falls under. If we can just see things through the lens of like, how would that food vibrate? Not to be woo-woo, but like, I think everyone kind of gets what that means. And then if you can look at things through that lens and then start to delve into these particular verticals and different ways of being able to honor your system, you preclude the necessity for the packaged foods. I was just throwing that in there because everyone seems to know what I mean 100%. When I say high vibe.
Okay, agreed. And I would also add in there your physiological state when you eat as well. If you just had a fight with your partner and your cortisol is soaring and all your blood is in your muscles, like, you're not going to really readily break down and absorb the food either. So being in a state of gratitude and being able to eat the high vibration foods, I'm 100% on board with all of that. It's great.
Love it. Okay, now that we're all eating high vibe foods and we are not in a post-conflict mode, take us through your version of like a ketogenic diet for women. So we're really tapping into energy and turning on our brains.
Yes. So when we look at the ketogenic diet and the benefits that it can confer for females, there's a couple of really interesting and important things I want to punch out here and highlight. So one, as we age, we want to be thinking about promoting healthy brain aging. We want to be thinking about preserving lean muscle mass. We want to be thinking about preserving and, potentially increasing our bone health and our bone density. So all of those things we can get when we are eating in a, I call this the, you know, my program is called the Keto Clean Protocol. So there's a lot of healthy fats. There's a lot of, there's, you know, a moderate amount of proteins. And then mostly the carbohydrates that we're eating tend to be vegetables. So I know that this may be a shocker to some, but vegetables are a carbohydrate. And when we look at the phytonutrients, the minerals, the vitamins, the fiber that it confers, and all the benefits that eating vegetable, like study after, it's almost like a foregone conclusion, like eating vegetables is very good for you. So we have a lot of green leafy vegetables in the diet, lots of protein and fat. So a typical keto clean protocol is going to be a 70% fat, 20% of your total calories are going to be coming from proteins. And then the rest, about 10%, is going to be coming from your carbohydrates. So we'll get into, you know, maybe what a typical keto clean meal might be. But when we think about brain, when we think about the brain, when you are in a state of ketosis, let's bring it back a little bit, one more step back. So in the keto clean program, we are restricting your carbohydrates, and we are restricting them primarily to the green leafy vegetables that I just described. So what we want to happen physiologically is when you are restricting one of your macronutrients, which is your carbs, we're going to have a fall in insulin levels. Your insulin level falling is going to, we are going to trigger an enzyme called lipase, which is going to initiate something called lipolysis, which, you know, fancy word for breaking down fat. So you're going to go into the adipocyte.
Everyone just perked up, by the way.
Oh, yay.
What?
Nerd Army Unite.
What? We're burning fat now? Carry on. I just want, for those of you who are driving and are like, what is she talking about? She's talking about burning fat. Keep going, Stephanie.
which is actually the goal of weight. Like, I don't like when we talk about weight loss. We want to be talking about fat loss, right? You don't want to be losing 100%. Muscle. You want to be preserving muscle. So we're talking about fat loss. So we go into the adipocyte, or we go into the fat cell, and the stored form of your food in your fat cell is a triglyceride or a triacylglycerol for my bio nerds. And what we'll do is we'll cleave that triglyceride molecule. So it'll cleave into three fatty acids. One triglyceride will render three fatty acids and one glycerin, the glycerin backbone. The glycerin can go on to make glucose through a process called gluconeogenesis. And then the fatty acids now can serve as a substrate for energy. So if you remember before, we were talking about exogenous and endogenous versions or substrates for energetic production. Fatty acids can serve as a substrate or a precursor for making energy. And it can do that in all cells save for two, your nerve cells and your red blood cells. So fatty acids can help start create that ATP or that energetic production. But they will also have to go through another pass through the liver to be able to produce ketone bodies. So that's what the ketogenic diet is actually named for. It's the fatty acid conversion through the liver that is now conferring these ketone bodies, of which the most abundant one is something called beta hydroxybutyrate, or BOHB for short. So now we have a substrate for our brain. So your brain takes up about 25% of your basal metabolic rate. Like, no matter what type of food you're eating, your brain will gobble up about 25% of that every single day. So now we have an alternative fuel. You can't completely replace glucose in the brain. Like, there will always be some amount of glucose that is going to be used through the process of gluconeogenesis and whatever dietary carbohydrates you're ingesting. But now your ketone bodies can be producing or going into that the TCA cycle or the Krebs cycle, it can be going into that cycle to now be producing ATP. And there's some evidence that ketone bodies are actually a much more efficient use or efficient substrate for ATP production, because we produce less oxidative damage when you use a ketone body versus when you're using a mole of glucose.
And I think what's so cool here too is that as women are approaching perimenopause and estrogen levels start to decline, ketones become a preferred source of fuel for the brain. That estrogen is really important for the breakdown of glucose. So it is actually really interesting, because we tend to think of like these, all right, we've got these 30-year-old type A women who are going to do keto and it's not applicable to anyone else. But it's actually highly applicable to women as they age and their estrogen levels drop. So attention, everyone.
And I'll also say that when you are producing a lot of that BHB, that beta hydroxybutyrate, this is where we start to see some of the specific benefits for females. So when we are thinking about aging, I don't know if it's gracefully, I think that's like a slogan from some campaign, but when we want to think about promoting healthy aging, whether it's brain aging, I think I'm talking about oil of Olay, is that what I'm talking about? Anyway, when we're thinking, promoting healthy aging, we want to be preserving lean muscle mass. And one of the things that we know about BHB is that it is, it increases the sensitivity of the muscles to leucine. So bear with me for a minute and I can clarify if there's anything here that is not making sense. But leucine is the branched chain amino acid that triggers muscle protein synthesis. So every time you have some protein, 20 to 30 grams-ish, that is going to trigger muscle protein synthesis. And that's going to help either maintain the lean body mass that you have, or in the case of beta hydroxybutyrate, it can also have an anabolic effect as well, meaning that you can also increase your lean body mass being in a state of ketosis. And it is also muscle sparing. So it beta hydroxybutyrate will spare muscle, like catabolic activity in the muscle, because of this increased leucine sensitivity. So you may actually need to eat less protein in order to have the same effect in terms of your muscle protein synthesis than when you are in a glycolytic state or when you are in a sugar burning state.
Who's that's really important not for women. For? Yeah, it is uniquely positioned, I think, for women if we do it in a way that, like you said, honors our system and where we're at. Who do you not recommend the ketogenic diet for? Who's not ready for it yet?
Well, I think that there's a few outliers in the population where it is much more difficult to get in the amount of fat that we're asking for here. So in the Keto Clean protocol, we ask for about 70% of your total caloric intake to be coming from fat. So that can be from all types of fat, polyunsaturated, saturated fats, mono unsaturated fats. However, it's much easier, especially if you're a meat eater, to be getting some of you will invariably get saturated fats from the meat that you're consuming. Coconut oil is also really big, typically in the diet. You know, we hear of the butter coffees and the bulletproof coffees and stuff. But there is a subset of the population when we look at their processing of saturated fats. So if I could guess, it's probably somewhere between 10 and 15% of the population don't process saturated fats very efficiently. So that can cause, it can be pro-inflammatory for those people. So for them, we have to take out all the saturated fats in their keto program. And it's just much harder. It's just much harder to make up all of your fats from poly and monounsaturated sources. So I have these people, taking shots of olive oil and stuff like that if they really want to do it. But yeah, there can be, 85 to 90% of the population, it would be something that's applicable for. But for some people with these PPAR alpha and PPAR gamma mutations in their genes, we do see that they don't tolerate saturated fats very well. So that would be something that I'd be looking for in terms of whether or not you'd be applicable for the Keto Clean protocol.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to uplevel their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe. Yeah, and one other population I'm really curious about are those women with strong estrogen dominant pictures. So women who have PCOS or women with a history of endometriosis just on Dutch testing are really strong in inflammatory estrogens. How have you found they have responded to a Keto Clean diet?
The women that have PCOS respond they respond beautifully, because if we think about what PCOS is, it's basically diabetes of the ovaries, right? So the typical population, like a diabetic, a type 2 diabetic, has insulin dysregulation, and there's a whole pro-inflammatory pathway that follows that. PCOS, what we see in this population is that they tend to be insensitive to insulin. There tends to be a lot of inflammation, and then we see, dysregulation in terms of the aromatization from their testosterones to their estrogens. But in general, my ladies on PCOS, it is wonderful for endometriosis. From my understanding of it, and I am not an expert in endo, but what I understand about endometriosis is that there's some thinking around it being an autoimmune condition. And it's like, when the woman has her period, it's like there's like shrapnels that are like exploding in her womb. And she has very, very painful periods. But this is all very much, when we think about autoimmunity in general, we also always want to be considering the microbiome, gut dysbiosis, hyperpermeability of the endothelial lining from the intestine through to the, and the barriers that it makes between the blood and the food that's consumed. So one of the things that we do on the keto program, on the Keto Clean program, is we do take a focus on the microbiome. So we do eat foods that feed the large, the microbiota that live in the large intestine. There's a lot of insoluble fiber, which helps with having regular bowel movements, which can be very useful for women with, I hate the word estrogen. Megan, what do you call estrogen dominance? Like, I hate that word. It's such a miss. I like to, it's actually, unopposed estrogen in the luteal phase of their cycle, but that's way too long to say. Is there something that you use other than estrogen dominance?
Yeah, I only use it because I always put it in the context of like, I talk about estrogen, I talk about progesterone, and like estrogen makes things, and there's different subsets of estrogens. Like if we want to geek out on estrogen, I actually quite enjoy that. There is, and this is not, but estrogen is like the lawn fertilizer and progesterone is like the lawnmower. And when we just throw on lawn fertilizer and sunshine and rain, we get this lawn that's out of control. And so you're right. It is unopposed, but I just, dominant is a word that I think we can all understand on a relative basis. And then there's three primary forms of estrogen. One just makes everything grow, and one really, really drives inflammation. And that's the one that, for me, it's called 4-hydroxyestrone, for those who want to maintain their flow state of geekiness on this particular podcast. That is one where I watch. If I'm going to work with someone from a ketogenic perspective, I do a ton of liver work first. Otherwise, I actually find their adrenals slip like out of control. I find it stresses their body out if we don't have their liver really, really functioning well before we start to engage in any kind of keto protocol. But I mean, you may have a different approach to that. That's just been my experience.
No, I love that, because I think that when you can amp up and facilitate liver detoxification, you're also going to be helping with the elimination of those estrogens, right? So you're going to be mitigating the DNA damage that can happen if you have, quinones that are being produced in the, as a result of that. So yeah, I love liver. I love working with the, like sort of doing a liver detoxification or helping to facilitate liver detoxification as well.
Because I kind of think of a ketogenic diet. Well, one, I think of it as a lifestyle, and two, I throw it into the category of advanced maneuver, insofar as I find the people that are successful on it, where it doesn't create stress on their system, they have some level of familiarity with respect to their health. So for those people who are like, I actually have only been eating food out of a package for the last 2 years, and I don't even know where to start, and I'm not moving consistently, and I don't even know when I last had blood work, or I'm possibly anemic. I find that we've got to get some of those fundamentals in place and get people checking into their body. And then once we are able to do that, this is a place where people can continue to grow and improve and have really consistent feedback with respect to ongoing, I'm going to call it like ongoing flows of energy. But I find for me, it's an advanced maneuver.
Yeah. And it really comes down to learning how to eat intuitively. So one of the things that eating this way in this keto clean protocol has helped me. When I first started, I was counting my macros and I was understanding, how much carbohydrates I was consuming, how much proteins, how much fats. But what has happened now is I am so in tune with what my body needs based on my cycle, based on how I've been training, and based on, the goals that I have for myself in terms of promoting health span and lifespan, that it's more of an intuitive way to eat for me now. And that's what I really want people to get from whatever protocol it is. Like for me, what's worked for me and my tribe has been very much a keto clean protocol. But if you say, well, I'm going to do paleo, I'm going to try to do keto and vegetarian, whatever, it doesn't really matter what it is, as long as you are serving and nourishing your cells so that they can work in a way that is optimal and you can, self-actualize on a cellular level, if that's even a thing.
It's a thing. It's totally a thing. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about this idea of eating or shifting your health choices in conjunction with your menstrual cycle? Because men, you can't do that. Sure.
And this is for women and also for the men who love them, right? So men, we know they're same all through the month, but females, if you are, in that 40 to 45 year period where you have a menstrual cycle, there are ways that you can change your eating habits to honor that cycle and to help, balance some of the hormones that we've been talking about. So, and it's funny, I will also just say this, most women don't know they are completely out of sync and out of tune with their menstrual cycle. I was just talking, like I was saying, a couple of days ago, and I just literally showed them like the estrogen and progesterone chart, when LH goes up, when FSH goes up, when ovulation is, and they're like, wow, this is groundbreaking. I'm like, we need to know about our cycle as women so that we can make modifications, not just to our nutrition, but also to our fitness, to our mindset, to some of the activities and the lifestyle factors that, that should change to honor that. So
I was just going to say, most women haven't even seen that diagram since in Canada, grade 9. Like that's when we did it. It's like jaws drop. And I feel like what happens after that health class in grade 9 is then we are conditioned by the popular media and our friends with like colloquial derogatory comments. We hate our period. It's a nuisance. It's this, it's that. And it's like, there's this huge opportunity to view it from a different lens. And I completely interrupted you, but I wanted to preface that because we're about to do that. You're about to drop that.
Yeah. So when we think about your menstrual cycle, I'm going to use an example of 28 days, but if your menstrual cycle is shorter or longer than that, then you can just adapt this to whatever your cycle dictates. We should all be tracking our cycle, because data drives outcomes, right? So if you have no idea when you're ovulating, you have no idea when you're about to get your period, like this is really important. So there's I'm sure you have a couple of apps that you really like. I love Clue. It's a free app that you can just put on your phone.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, one of my favorites. So, okay. So first day one to day, call it 6 or 7, this is the bleed, right? This is when we are shedding the endometrial lining. This is when we have what we call our period. So at this point, when we think about the fluctuation in hormones during this period, estrogen is very low, progesterone is very low. This is a great time to adhere to that keto clean protocol. So that's 70% fat, 20% protein, and then 10% carbohydrate. This is also a really great time if you are interested in fasting for a longer period of time. This would be a good time in your cycle to play with it. And when I say fasting, I do feel like I have to define this term a little bit because it can mean so many different things. Throughout your cycle, like any time of the month, any time of the week, any time of the year, I do believe that we should all be practicing time-restricted feeding. So that is to say that we are eating in a certain time window, so call it 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours at the very most. I don't like using intermittent fasting for that term because that's not really fasting. That's just a restricted feed on a day-to-day basis. When I say fasting, what I'm referring to is a fast for 24 hours or longer. So during that, when you are shedding the endometrial lining during your period, this is a good time to play with or experiment with maybe trying a 24-hour fast if you've never tried it before.
Does that include water?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different types of fasting as well. And I can also, for your listeners, if it's useful, I wrote an article on the different types of fasting. So we talk about like water fasting, we talk about we talk about caloric liquid fasting. So that could be, you know, bone broth, that can be, you know, almost like a caloric restrictive model where you're taking in about, you know, 30 to 40% of your calories. And then we also have fasting mimetics. There's a lot of different ways to fast. And when you are thinking about what type of fast you want to be engaging in, I want you to think about what your goals are, right? So if it's fat loss, then, you know, there's a myriad of applications that are going to help get you into that state of ketosis. If it's, you know, to help heal your gut, then we definitely want to be leaning more towards a water fast or a non-caloric liquid fast, because that is going to allow the gut to rest, to heal, and to repair. So, lots of different fasts for lots of different applications, but this would be, we'll just pretend that we're talking about fat loss. It can be a caloric liquid fast, like having bone broth through the day, or having, you know, bulletproof coffee and that's, you know, that's it for the day. Or it can also just be a pure fast as well, a pure water fast as well. Pardon me.
Amazing. Okay. So keep going. We're playing around and experimenting with this during our menstrual cycle.
Yeah. So you're playing around with maybe one day you try a 24-hour fast, and you're adhering to that 70-20-10, that keto clean protocol. From day 8 to 14, so in general, the first part of your period is called the follicular phase. So this is when we have estrogen levels rising in order to drive the maturation of the egg in preparation for ovulation, which, by the way, is actually the whole point of your menstrual cycle. It's not to bleed, right? The point of your menstrual cycle is to ovulate, which is why I don't even like calling it day one. I don't like that we call day one the first day of our, like, is our period, because it almost denotes that, you know, that the ovulation is not the main event. But anyway, that's just my inner nerd and nomenclature that bothers me. So day 8 to 14, we see estrogen levels rising. We see testosterone levels rising. This is when, ladies, you are your horniest that you are going to be all month long, because testosterone, we know, increases our libido. And this is also a really great time to increase your protein. So we were talking about, you know, muscle protein synthesis and the sensitization that, you know, being in a ketogenic state has, and the leucine sensitivity. If you feel so inclined or you feel drawn to this, I would also think about lifting heavy weights during this time. So you are driving, you are taking advantage of that surge in testosterone to build more of that lean body mass. And you may change your ratios of macronutrients. So instead of being a 70-20-10, you may decrease your fat to 60. You may increase your protein to 30, and then you keep your carbs the same. Or another thing that you might play with is playing with your carbohydrate timing right before those big workouts. So, and that's going to facilitate your performance. So that'll actually help you. It'll prolong your fatigue to those with that heavy weightlifting protocol. So you can do like a 55% fat, a 30% protein, and then 15% carbohydrate. But playing around with the carbohydrate timing so that you're having it, you know, 30 to 45 minutes before your workout.
Love this.
So then we have ovulation around day 14. And that is, as I mentioned before, the main event. That is the actual reason why we menstruate, why we have a menstrual cycle. So here we see a drop in estrogen. Testosterone levels are coming down. So between kind of day 14 to call it day 19, we see that precipitous drop in estrogen before it starts to rise again. So here is where I would come back to that typical keto clean protocol, that 70-20-10. You are lifting weights, but maybe they are not as heavy. You're not doing as many power workouts, but you are decreasing the weight. You're increasing the repetitions that you're doing. And I would also probably recommend, just because it's a great time to work on some connective tissue stuff as well. So, maybe some proprioceptive, and like balance, exercises maybe at the end of your weight workout. Day 21, progesterone is at its highest. So progesterone, as you mentioned, it is so important for many things, but as it relates to metabolism and as it relates to females, it typically slows down your bowel movements. It increases your core body temperature, and it will, you will also note that you are more insulin sensitive, and you have a, you know, your appetite is increased as well during this time. So this is part of, when we think of the word progesterone, pro-gestation, pro-pregnancy, this is the hormone that allows you to get pregnant and stay pregnant. And at this point in the game, it's being secreted from the corpus luteum. So what we want is we want to be increasing our water. This is really important because you are not pooping. You are not having, typically if you are not increasing your fiber intake and your water, you're going to see a marked slowing down of your bowel movements. So this is where we can increase our carbohydrates, and the carbohydrates are not just the cookies and the Häagen-Dazs and the chocolate. Although I would say that you're increasing, well, it can be the dark chocolate. I don't mind that because there's a lot of magnesium in there. So the dark chocolate is I have dark chocolate like almost every day, but, in that luteal phase, increasing your insoluble fiber. So the green leafy vegetables, that we were talking about that makes up the basis of the Keto Clean protocol, there'd be a lot more of those. So much more like spinach and arugula and kale and Swiss chard and, you know, bok choy and, you know, all those good things, steaming them or having them raw. And I would also increase your resistant starches during this time as well. So for those of you that have never heard of a resistant starch, the name sort of gives away the mechanism. So it is a starch that resists digestion, meaning that the small intestine and the stomach cannot break down the resistant starch as a carbohydrate to be utilized as a substrate in the body. So it serves as food basically for the microbiome. And this is actually one of the things that I think separates my program from many others. A lot of people who've tried keto in the past, one of the hallmarks that I've often heard people coming into Keto Clean will say is, oh, I tried keto, but I was so hungry. It didn't matter how much fat I had. And I just fell off of it because I couldn't maintain it. But part of the reason why you were so hungry was because your microbiome was starving. If you are not eating enough green leafy vegetables through the month and you're not consuming resistant starches, your microbiome is going to send a distress signal to your brain to eat, 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 eat. So this,
can you give people some examples of resistant starches?
Sure. Oh yeah. Thank you. So I would say my favorites are, you can buy them in powder form, but like a green banana flour or even a green banana. And if you know the lifespan of a green banana, it's like it goes green and then it goes, you know, yellow, and then it kind of turns spotty and brown. And that is the resistant starches becoming digestible starches. That is the sugar, if you want to look at it, it's like sugar maturation. So the carbon bonds get shorter and shorter. So we want to be eating green bananas or green plantains. Raw potato starch is another great source of resistant starches. And if you're a ninja, you can also be looking at cold rice and cold potatoes as well.
Hey, you. If you're a colleague, if you're a practitioner, if you are seeing patients, if you are looking to up-level your impact in the health and wellness space, I wanted to let you know that we are hosting one heck of an amazing event taking place on November 21, 22, 23 in Toronto. Impact Lives is our signature flagship event that takes place on an annual basis, and it is a coming together of some of the most impactful people in the health and wellness industry. Over the 3 days, we are unpacking the mindset that has been holding you back from achieving the impact you have always dreamed of. We are spending a day looking at new tactics and techniques, some of the things that people are using in a cutting edge capacity to take their impact and their practice to the next level. And if you want to join us for our VIP bonus day, we are going deep in a workshop setting, 6 different workshops to up-level your mindset, your business, and your impact. Impact Lives is an incredible experience. And our promise to you this year is that when you walk through the door, you will not be capable of leaving as the same person you were when you arrived. If you want to learn more about how you can participate in Impact Lives, check us out online, www.impactlivesevent.com. I cannot wait to see you there. I feel like cold rice and cold potatoes far exceed my desire for a green banana.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And the more you heat up and cool the rice, the more resistant starches you have. The reason why I use those as like a ninja move is it's not as measurable and quantifiable, the percentage of resistant starches in a cold rice or a cold, you know, cold French fries than that in a green banana powder. So I will often say, put the green banana powder in your shake. It has that, you know, banana taste. So you sort of get the, you know, the sense, you know, the taste that you are, that you're having bananas, but without the sugar and without the glycemic load. But if you want to have cold rice and cold potatoes, I would definitely heat and cool them as many times as you can and eat them cold from the fridge with some olive oil on them.
Yeah. See, that sounds lovely to me, but I can see why for so many reasons, it's a ninja move.
Ninja move. Yeah. And why that's amazing in terms of your, you know, ketogenic journey is when you feed the microbiota this food source, the resistant starches, they in turn are now going to give you a present back, which is fatty acid. So they will produce something called butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid. And now that also is going to serve as a substrate for energetic to drive your Krebs cycle, the tricarboxylic acid cycle. And it can also cross the blood brain barrier. So it's going to help with your sleep. It's going to help heal the intestinal permeability. Like there's so many great things that butyrate does. So that's kind of a bonus as well. But that would be really useful for you to be doing in the week leading up to your period. And then finally, the last 2 days, so like let's call it 26 and 27, this is where we have this precipitous drop in everything. So your body's like, okay, she's not pregnant, drop everything, restart. So estrogen drops, progesterone drops. These are really great recovery days in terms of your movement. So I really love for people to go for long walks, you know, meditate, do all the things that you've been putting off all month long because you're a type A personality and you forget to meditate, such as myself. And so that's sort of how I map out the month for females on Keto Clean.
And what do you do when women have longer menstrual cycles?
You just, you know, the more that you understand your cycle, so if it's a 29 day or a 30 day, you're just going to adapt this to your cycle. So I'm sort of breaking it up into week increments because that divides nicely into 28. But you can just, you know, if you know that your period is a little bit longer or a little bit shorter, if you know that your ovulation doesn't occur on day 14, maybe it's day 16 or maybe it's day 12, then you can modify this to match that.
Love it. Such great advice. You forgot one stage to the ripening of a banana. That's the banana bread phase.
Oh, the when it's black and the peels are just falling off.
Correct. I make my kids banana bread all week, but we use paleo flour. So, and we don't put sugar in it. And anyways, we frequently reach the banana bread phase of the banana ripening.
Yeah, it's like the avocado, right? Like when you have, it's like 3 o'clock, avocado's ready. 3:05, you've missed it.
That's right. You can't miss the window. I feel like we could do this all day long because it's such an interesting topic, and I love the perspective that you're providing in terms of how do we make this uniquely valuable to women. Because I feel like our voice has been missing for so long in that traditional medical and that science world as it pertains to nutritional science. So thank you for doing that. I also think this is an amazing opportunity and place for us to transition the interview where I get to ask you some questions related to how you do it in the real world. So just like we have KPIs in our business, I believe that we have key performance indicators in our lives as well. So I've got some rapid fire questions for you so we can all get a sense of how Dr. Stephanie Estima lives her day. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm game.
Amazing. Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, this is such a good question. Who is inspiring me right now? I would have to say some of the podcast guests that I've had. I just interviewed Emily Fletcher. She's going to be, the episode hasn't been released yet, but her breadth of work is so impressive. So she is inspiring me right now. I would also say Dr. Shefali Sabari and we are both part of a mastermind where Jennifer Kalari is a part of. So I am doubling down right now on my parenting skills and trying to up-level my my role and how I show up for my children. So Dr. Shefali has been instrumental in how I reframe what the point of being a parent is. And Jennifer Kalari has been I have to have her on the podcast talking about some of the things that she's coached me through in terms of helping my kids establish, you know, I talk about, you know, morning routines and evening routines for high performing females. And she really broke this down for me for developing high performing kids. And yeah, so these are the three people I just bow down to right now.
Amazing. Such great insight. I can't wait to check out more of their work. And Emily's just so lovely.
Oh, she's such a joy. Mm-hmm. She's just a walking joy. Yes.
I will just share a small story about her. I was, when I was speaking at Mindshare this year, and I was looking through the audience, there was just this one person who just had this like kind, cheer you on smile the whole time. And it was her. And I went up to her afterwards and I was like, you are the best audience member in the history of the world. But I think that's the energy that she shows up with for everything every day. Yeah. She's just amazing. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I am reading three books right now. So I am reading Playing God with Anthony Yoon. I'm reading Dirty Jeans with Dr. Ben Lynch. And I am finishing up, this is a book that I come back to over and over again, but I'm rereading it again. It's called The Heroine's Journey. Her name is Murdoch, I believe. What's her first name? Maureen Murdoch.
Three good choices. So it is, mm-hmm. Do you ever do fiction?
You know, I don't do fiction as often as I should. I interviewed Elizabeth Gilbert, so I read City of Girls, and that was the first fiction book I had read probably in years. The last one I read was probably, The Demons and Angels. What am I thinking of? It was the, I can't remember the author's name.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't read fiction that often, but when I do, I'm like, wow, this was really enjoyable. I should do this more often.
Dan Brown. I think it was a Dan Brown.
That's who I'm thinking of. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm halfway through Elizabeth Gilbert's new book right now. I just find I find fiction hard. Even in my Audible, I find it hard.
Yeah, if City of Girls was amazing though, because I'm going down this in general in my career, you know, we've talked about keto clean for females, but I want to unpack what it means to be female. And she talks a lot about female desire and feminine sexuality. And, you know, she has this story that she goes through with these women in New York and stuff, but this sort of predatory behavior. And it was perfectly timed for me because I'm trying to also unpack, you know, the brain benefits around a woman just owning her sexuality and asking for what she wants. So I'd be interested when you're done, we can have a conversation and geek out about like some of the through lines in her book.
I can't wait. What's the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Training and eating. Those are my two non-negotiables all the time. I typically, as I said, time restrict feed every single day. Usually during my period, I will fast for, depending on, you know, the energetic levels that I have, but a day to 3 days. So I will do typically a 24 to 72 hour fast, or if I can't do the 72 hour fast continuously, I'll do the OMAD. So the one meal a day, which is technically a 24 hour fast. And then I train, every day. I do take one day off. So I've learned that recovery, this is like, again, for my type A listeners or the people that are listening that are type A personalities, all your gains happen in recovery. And I had to learn this the hard way because I was like, nope, I can do it. I'm not like anybody else. I can just push through and head down and, you know, and your body will hold on to body fat like it is an insurance policy and your cortisol levels will soar. And yeah, so I've recovery. So I do take 2 to 3 days recovery in the days leading up to my period. And but other than that, I train pretty much every day. It's just the type of training that changes, whether it's strength or hypertrophy or endurance training.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I can do a really good British accent and a really good French accent. And I often will get in character if Giovanni and I, so my partner Giovanni, and I will go out on a date and I will be Veronique for the whole night and I will speak in the French accent and I will just keep it like that for the whole night. That's just me being a super nerd, but yeah, that's something that I don't know if that's badass or that's just me being silly, but
that's awesome. What do you do for fun or play?
What do I do for fun? So my children always remind me that play is important. So they want to play every single day. So that that can be Lego building, that can be running around in a park, that can be playing the silliest, you know, they play a lot of grounders in the park, which I still don't quite understand the rules, but I try to play with them. So my play primarily comes with playtime with my children.
Yeah, it's so perfect, right? You can piggyback on the two. I also find my meditation time comes from being with my children.
Oh, that's nice.
Take
yeah,
deep
I've never
breath
that's so
and try great. To be present, right?
Yeah.
Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we're born with it. I think that when we look at, and I actually have a bit of a theory in terms of like the genes and how quickly we metabolize dopamine. But I think people that have quick metabolizers of dopamine, so high COMT activity, COMT, I think that you'll find that population runs higher in the entrepreneurial circles because we get the hit and we're like, okay, great, next one. You know, we get the big deal, we get the big client, we run the big practice and we say, okay, great. What's next? So I think that there's a couple of traits that I think are uniquely entrepreneurial. And I think that we're just generally, I don't want to say rejects from society, but kind of, because we are, for the most part, we invite the most pain into our lives than I think the normal population might. We definitely don't think security is a big, you know, we run our own businesses, we take all the risk. I think that we are, I'm going to say rejects. I'm going to own that. I think that we are definitely rejects and reject the current, you know, discussion and what we consider normal.
I could talk about this with you all day, and clearly we need to have a more in-depth discussion about the genetics of entrepreneurs, and I can relate to everything that you just shared. Dr. Stephanie Estima, like always, it is a pleasure to chat with you. Where can we send people to learn a little bit more about what you're up to?
So if you want to find more about the Keto Clean program, you can find that at www.drstephanieestima.com. You can find me on Instagram. I'm quite active there. So Dr. Stephanie Estima. And on Facebook, I think I'm Dr. Estima. So if you just look up my Stephanie Estima, you'll find me there.
Wait, you missed one. You have a wicked new podcast called Better.
Oh my gosh. That's right. Yeah. So my podcast, it's called Better with Dr. Stephanie, and you can find that on Apple, whatever your favorite podcast app is, or the website is bettershow.co.
Amazing. We will hook everybody up with all of those links, including how you can subscribe to Dr. Stephanie's podcast, which is amazing. You are all going to love it. Stephanie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Megan. It's always a pleasure.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love to hear from you or have you give us a quick review over in Apple Podcasts. We are hanging out this week over on Instagram. You can always find me at Dr. Megan Walker. Engage in our stories. Come and share your thoughts of the ketogenic diet and some of the insights that you got from Dr. Stephanie in our episode today. Until next week, I want you to try to eat some wacky, crazy, healthy food and go build something amazing.